Good evening, everyone. As you know, I'm very firm about starting on time and ending on time, especially when it's a holiday week. Good afternoon. I am now going to start for the Metro Access meeting here. Anyone with pagers, beepers, cell phones, please turn them off or put them on silent. Customers, as you're coming in, if you want to speak during the customer comment period, please do raise your hand. And we're going to start with introductions, starting at the table with AAC members. And then there'll be a mic going around introducing all the wonderful staff and people from the public. All right, I'm Paul Summerford. I'm your wonderful Metro Access chairperson for tonight, Prince George's County, Capitol Heights. And Ms. Rush?
Denise Rush, Suitland, Maryland, vice chair of Metro Access, vice chair of the AAC committee.
Go ahead, Charlie, you're next.
Okay. Speaking of wonderful people, I'm here. I'm Charlie Crawford, yeah, from Silver Spring, and also representing Access for All for the Council of Governments.
Okay, let's keep the wonderful going. I'm Philippa Mazzell, Washington, D.C., native of Kansas City, Missouri. Go Chiefs.
Hi, I'm Melanie Jackson, Silver Spring, and I'm still new to the committee.
We'll make you feel very welcome.
Thank you.
A hearty welcome to all these wonderful people. My name is Allison Anderson with Metro Access, and I have to share, too. Go Chiefs.
All right, Phil.
Phil Posner, I'm just a plain regular guy that's here all the time. And I'm from Arlington County.
All right, and someone should... let's see if the wonderful lady's going to make the seat here, so we're going to come back for her. We'll come back to you in a minute. Someone with a mic, please. Someone with a mic, please, that can introduce the folks. We're going to keep that momentum rolling and moving. You might as well give it to B. Moore Gwynn so she can introduce herself.
Behind you.
Oh,
all right. Take care.
Is the mic on?
No.
Mic Ron Locker, MB Transportation.
There we go.
Cross the ground, Tim.
Alan Strokes, Metro Access.
Russell Carter, First Transit.
Carl Shelby. All right. Let's see. Oh, we got people over here. No, don't hide. We're all family.
Happy Thanksgiving. Pretty good. You?
Yeah. Well, you want to introduce yourself.
Chris Blake, Access Services.
All right, go ahead, Darnese. Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, B. Moore Gwynn, Access Services.
Oh, okay. Eligibility.
Darnese Henry Bush, D.C., Washington, D.C.
All right. So we're going to... we got a microphone. Oh, we got to introduce her. I will let her sit down for a minute. The Queen Bee. All right. So... we're going to review the wonderful agenda here and minutes from the prior meeting. All right, we got a fully packed agenda. Are there any changes? I hear no changes. I heard the crickets. All in favor of improving the agenda as is, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries. Next to the minutes, did everyone review the minutes? Any changes, additions, subtraction to the minutes? Hearing the crickets, can someone move the minutes as is?
I move it.
Second. All right, all those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nays. Abstentions. All right, that carries. Ms. Williams-Hall, you can introduce yourself.
Sure. Terrian Williams-Hall, Metro Access.
All right. And next, we got customer service and outreach reports.
Good afternoon. At this time, we will have Mr. Carlton Brown with MTM give the report from our public comments from last session.
Following the meeting, we investigated the complaint. I'm sure that they were scheduling procedures as opposed to the required all of the time that we called up.
Thank you. In regards to outreach from our last session, we have a couple items to share. During the month of November, myself, along with Mr. David Schaefer, had the opportunity to attend a transportation fair that was provided by the Department of Homeland Security. I don't know if you all are aware, that department is going to be actually moving to a new location, I believe in Southeast at the old St. Elizabeth complex in Southeast. And yes, sir. So they had a fair for their employees to give them information concerning travel options. Of course, Metro Bus, Metro Rail, and Metro Access were there to share information. Also, not so secret. And also, Mr. Schaefer wanted me to share that he did an outreach with the Society for the Prevention of Blindness to share with the individuals in that particular group tips on using Metro for passengers that are blind and low vision. Additionally, he also gave a presentation on Abilities Ride to the Capitol Veterans Engagement Board for access for disabled veterans. So that concludes our outreach report for this period.
Okay, wonderful. Elver, you want to quickly introduce yourself as I move with the agenda?
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elver Ariza Silva, Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. All right.
Thank you, sir.
Next is the Michael Wilson and Rush Award. Any recipients of the Michael Wilson Award this morning?
Yes, we do have an award presentation this afternoon. At this time, I'd like to call up Mr. Mike Rademacher, Project Manager for MV Transportation.
Come on up to the mic, sir.
We working?
I think so.
All right. MV is pleased to honor Ronette Miller, who is a dispatch supervisor at the Metro Access Operations Control Center. Ronette joined the MV Transportation family in 2012 and was quickly promoted to her current role as a dispatch supervisor in July of 2013. During her 6 years with the company, she has become a subject matter expert for the operation and a go-to person for handling escalated customer concerns with empathy and compassion. Ronette has stated what she loves most about her job is helping others, to include coaching her teammates for success. Please join us in celebrating Ronette Miller, the Michael Wilson Award winner for November 2018. Thank you.
Congratulations. Photo op time.
Did you want to give a speech? No, ma'am? You sure? All right. Thank you, Ronette, for all you do. We really do appreciate you.
All right. As we move on, Denise Rush?
My recipient is not here yet, so I guess we'll have to move on. Thank you.
All right. Just let us know when the recipient's here, and we will go ahead with that award and stop everything. Next is the Easter Seals Project update. Mr. Blake? Our recipient arrived.
Mr. Blake, excuse me. The recipient of the Rush Award this month is not a direct person that works for Metro Access, but to me, helps the system work for me. It's Mr. Bill Orleans.
Come on up. Come on up, Bill.
Mr. Orleans is... Mr. Orleans is everywhere. He tells me all the meetings that are happening at cab service, transportation, metro, anywhere you're supposed to be or should know about. If you don't attend, he tells you what's happening. He tells me what I need to be there, what time, gives me the update, and really helps me to understand transportation. I think he really understands transportation. He encourages me to ask this question or make me think and say, that's a good question, or no, that's not a good question. He is just really everywhere, and I appreciate him, and I just want to say thank you.
Come on up. We got something for you.
Any doubt that Bill would want to give a speech? Do you want to give a good?
Well, I'd like to.
All right, keep it brief to 3 minutes.
No, I have nothing to say except since you mentioned meetings. For those of you from Montgomery or Prince George's County, and others are welcome. The Washington Suburban Transit Commission. Mr. Blake would have some recollection of what that is, which has never had a public meeting in its 40-plus year history, are holding two public meetings in Prince George's on November 28th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the County Recreation Department headquarters, 6600 Kenilworth Avenue, and I'll call you to let you can put it in your machine. And then in Montgomery County, it had been suggested that there should be one meeting for both at the University of Maryland campus, but they decided to have two. The Montgomery meeting is December, Charlie, I'm specifically looking at you now, and anybody else here from Montgomery, is December 6th from 7 to 9 p.m. in the County Council's building, Council Chamber in Rockville. So I would look forward to people coming to it. And
thank you, I guess.
And then lastly, if I could smack somebody.
No.
You don't play that. I'm from Baltimore, remember that.
Thank you. All right, thank you so much. All right, Easter Seal Projects update. Mr. Blake.
On this one, I think I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Anderson because she's been our outstanding liaison to this project. So do you have any? I mean, I don't think we need a long. Do you have anything?
I can share some information. Actually, Mr. Crawford has also been in attendance to the two meetings thus far that have taken place, so definitely please fill in if I miss something. But basically, we had very, very good attendance at these meetings. The first meeting was primarily a meeting to kind of create the foundation and let the folks that did attend know or get information basically on how Metro Access operates, some of our policies and procedures, and to answer any questions surrounding that, so that as they were starting to think about an app, kind of like the Where's My Ride app, as they were starting to think about that, that they were firmly grounded with our policies and procedures. The second meeting then started to go into more of a wish list of what customers would like to see from an app, the type of information, how it would be used, how it would be set up, accessibility
concerns and issues that would need to be taken into consideration with an app, a potential app. So there were a lot of good brainstorming ideas and information that was compiled during that second meeting. The third meeting, which I believe is, it's December 9th. Don't quote me on that. December 7th, okay. That third meeting is going to be centered around more so the technical side of, now that we have this exhaustive wish list, what actually can be implemented. And so I would definitely encourage anyone, if you're interested in this particular topic and whatnot, this may be a very good meeting to attend and listen at least to what's being formulated as recommendations for hopefully in the future a potential app.
I'm sorry, what's the location again?
It is at the Easter Seals offices located in Silver Spring, Maryland. The address is 1420 Spring Street in Silver Spring. Did I get everything, Charlie?
100%.
All right, great.
When is the next meeting?
December 7th. And the meeting goes from 10 to 2, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's the important part.
All right. Let's keep it moving. Ms. Anderson, you're up next for the customer guide update.
I am. I see that. good evening, everybody. I have a couple of points that I want to share with the committee as we go through this process of trying to revise our Metro Access customer guide. I definitely, again, want to thank the committee for your recommendations and input. They're very much so valued. This is not the end of this process. This is actually probably still at the beginning stages where I'm going to probably ask after we discuss some of the where we are currently that maybe in the next month or two, probably the next 2 months, either January or February, that I be allowed to come back to the committee with further revisions. Again, what was sent out over the weekend was kind of our first initial draft. It doesn't have everything in it. We're still tweaking and working on the document, but I just want to make sure that you know that this document has not been sent for any publication, okay? It is a kind of a first pass of implementing some of the recommendations. There are still some things that we still continue to work on, but it is not complete by any means, that we have a lot of stakeholders that are involved in the process along with the committee. We have folks here at WMATA, our MAX leadership, our access service leadership, and whatnot. So there are a lot of eyes that will be looking and giving feedback as it relates to this document. I would like to say that I tried to incorporate a large number of what I would call the kind of the cosmetic changes recommended by the committee, some of the bolding for emphasis, maybe making something stand out in red, those sorts of changes that were recommended by the committee to bring, again, emphasis to certain important items that the committee felt were needed and necessary there. Also, there were some major informational items included. Again, this is not the end-all, be-all, but just to give you some information on excuse me, some of the major items that we definitely wanted to make sure were included in our next revision. Of course, the Metro Access Smart Trip Card information. We pulled a lot of information from the already leaflet and booklet that is out in publication to put within the Metro Access Customer Guide. We also added in some of the frequently asked questions, easy pay refund information. That's something that I know this committee has been asking for be included in the guide. So we do have some information relative to that under the frequently asked questions. Also, abilities ride and transport DC information. That's also referenced. We plan to reference in the customer guide. I think, Dr. Posner, you mentioned about Dash accepting the Metro Access card, so that was mentioned also in the guide. So we have a lot of different changes, big and small, that are being put into the guide again. We are still culling, and there are still going to be more changes forthcoming. Let me say that, as mentioned before, and this was a little while back, but as mentioned before, I know the committee has had some recommendations as to, pertaining to potential policy changes or the way it's reference in the customer guide. The customer guide is not going to be the vehicle to put forth policy changes. That will come through other avenues and other procedures to do that. So we will not be using that, the Metro Access customer guide, as a way to go about impacting and changing policy just on the face, but obviously any policy or operational changes would have to be fully vetted, and that would again be through another process. Access Service Leadership will have the final approval on the final published document. But again, the AAC will see that before anything is actually goes to publication. So you guys will actually see the final document before any publication takes place there. Also, too, I would request that some of the photos on the guide may need to be updated, and that if any of you are interested in participating in a photo shoot, please let me know. I would definitely be interested in having you participate, or if you know of anyone that would be willing to participate, I think we're probably going to have to do some photo updates in some circumstances with the guide. So definitely your participation and help with that would be much appreciated. Again, I would like to request that maybe I get time on the January or February docket to go through any other revisions with the customer guide at that time. So that's what I have right now. I guess I'll open it up for any questions or comments.
Okay. Elver, I have on the list, Ms. Bellamy. No? Okay. Any other committee? Oh, Denise? Anyone else? Charlie? No? Okay. All right. I'll start with Elver. And then go with Denise Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question and one comment or suggestion. The question is, are we going to, the committee is going to have access to the guide I know you said that prior to publication, but I mean after the second revision that you are trying to do, or that, I mean, once you review or once you complete the editing, you will send that to us so we can review it and then get back to you for the last meeting. Did I understand that correct?
Well, I think it's probably going to be one more time coming to the committee with some revisions, then taking it back, and then maybe after that, coming up with the final, which will be already vetted by Access Service Leadership. Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Blake is stopping me.
Just a little slight variation. We want you to continue to work with Ms. Anderson and the team. You're going to create what we call the draft final. And that's going to be blessed by you and Ms. Anderson and others. At that point, that's your expectation, and I recognize that. But I do have a duty to, if you want to say, protect the agency. So I have to review it one last time. If there are any changes that I have to make, I will certainly be transparent and let you know. But, you know, just trying to be transparent, honest, open, the buck has to stop with me at that point. There would be, if I have to make changes, and I feel I'm making changes on behalf of the agency, there won't be debate about that. Now, I'm not anticipating that because Ms. Anderson is kind of leading this, and we're not making major policy changes, and that's not what this document is being used for. So I'm not anticipating that, but I do like to put everything on the table just in case. I might change a comma to a semicolon. I mean, I'm just saying there could be a change, but it's not likely. But let's not be upset or feel aggrieved if there happens to be a change or two. But I will be fully transparent with any change that I feel has to be made. All right.
Thank you. And my recommendation or suggestion is that I do not know how many pictures or graphics you will be included into the new guide, but if you are going to have a different, it would be ideal to have different folks with different abilities so they can just be into the guide, a person who is low vision, a person who is deaf, et cetera, so a diversity would be so helpful.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and that's what we're looking for. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
We have already submitted our suggestions. When I would like a list of things that we have put in that you're not going to acknowledge or are not going to change, so that we don't have to read through the whole thing and try to figure out what's going on. You wanted door to door. We're not doing that. Or you wanted 5 minutes. We're only going to give you three. Whatever it is, be specific and just send it to the members so we can cut through the red tape. Just like you say, at the end of the day or the bottom line. I'd appreciate that rather than having to have Jaws read me page after page after page, and I got to sit there and pick straws. Okay?
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I definitely understand that. So I just want to make sure that the committee does understand, you know, the changes that have been made, and we can certainly put together the list of changes or recommendations that were given that would not be included in the version, the final version of the customer guide. So that's not a problem.
Yeah, because we debated back and forth a lot about a policy change when it wasn't a policy change. The service changed their interpretation of the wording. So we didn't change the policy. The policy was changed by interpretation or wording. So I want to be specific and clear. Thank you.
All right. I know this new guy, we also asked to include an updated list of Metro Rail stations that have a Metro Access stop. And to be clear as to where the stop is, like whatever bus bay it is, that type of deal.
Yeah, we do have a recent copy or listing. I didn't include it in this draft. I plan to. It's just a matter of the logistics of where to place it in the customer guide and the formatting. So we do have a list, and it is planned to place that information.
Okay, and also just be clear as to which stations, for whatever reason, may not have that, maybe architectural for whatever reason, because I know there are some Metro Rail stations that don't have a Metro Access bus stop unless that's changed.
So if I understand you, you're saying to include those Metro Access stations or the Metro stations that don't have a designated bus bay?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that way customers know.
Okay.
So they're not, you know, figuring out, oh, where is it, that type of thing. So they clearly know which stations have it and where, and the ones that just don't. So, you know, that type of deal. So they have that information in advance.
Well, last week at Bus Rail, we had a presentation from Mr. Hemry about what they're
doing. Oh, use the mic. Are you on the mic?
I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm just subdued tonight.
Oh.
Mr. Hammer gave a presentation of what they're doing at Metro Rail stations that don't have access to buses for the shuttle buses, and they have set up specific Metro bus sites for where those buses are going to be, and that might be a good location for the Metro Access vehicles to go at those stations that don't have bus bays. So if you check with Mr. Hammery about where the locations are going to be for the shuttle buses at those stations that don't have an obvious shuttle bay, an obvious bus bay, that might be useful information for drop-offs. I know a classic example is Capitol Hill, where the buses go to Independence Avenue and First Street because there's a parking lot between the metro station and the road.
Okay. Thank you for that, because we definitely want to make sure that as much as possible, we have the most current and up-to-date information. We don't want to publish this guide and then a month after we do it, it's not, you know, accurate information or something's been updated.
So to answer your question, we would love to see you back in January and or February, of course, pending weather. So that's why I'm saying both months. Charlie, did you have a comment?
I, listening to this, a couple of things came to my mind. The first is when the document is finally ready for issuance, how long a period will it remain in effect so that we can have a sort of predictable life cycle for it? And then secondly, what activities will be planned to educate the general Metro Access public to the terms of the new document?
Well, as it relates to right now, we don't have, say, a process as to, or a calendar, I should say, as to the life cycle, say, of the document. So that's actually a great idea that we probably need to establish one so that we're on a consistent cycle to produce updates. As you know, customer guides and issuance thereof cost, you know, there's a cost associated with that. So we have to obviously be mindful of that. But maybe Mr. Blake can maybe make a comment on what he sees as, you know, how we'll get this out to the public, if it will be similar to what we've done, not the last revision, but the revision before. We did a mass mailing. We had the video version also mailed to those customers that that required that. We had the Spanish language version, so I'm not sure what's maybe on the docket for this particular revision.
Well, I think it's a little early to say specifically, because we do want to see. I want to see, and that's why I've kind of stayed a little distant from the process. Because I think the point Ms. Rush is making is if there are wholesale changes, then there obviously needs to there's a need to get the new document into the hands of as many customers as possible. There are only minor changes. We can probably find other means to get the message out to the customers. One thing, you know, switching to a different committee, and it's a different customer group, but we're printing limited editions of the metro, of the customer guide for fixed route services. That's not the official name. It's customer guide for bus and rail for people with disabilities and senior citizens. And we do have on that version audio, Spanish, large text, and the PDF versions. And we do print some limited editions and distribute them at the community meetings and other outreaches we participate in. Metro Access, again, is a little different. Will a wholesale mailing be required? Well, that's really going to depend on what product you all, you and the committee, provide to me for review. If there are limited changes, we may go in a different direction, but we'll have that discussion with the committee and with staff as we get closer to a final product.
I just had a question. I'm not familiar with the guide, so are they located in a special place or are they mailed out? What's the process and what's in the guide for the customers, because I don't know.
Well, the Metro Access Customer Guide is kind of like what I'd call explanation of the operation of how Metro Access works, and it's a handy guide for our Metro Access customers to know the ins and outs and kind of how to navigate the system, the service area, the payment, how to utilize the system, how to book a reservation, some of the basic tenets of how to use Metro Access. In the past, the last big mailing that we did, I believe, was in August of 2014. We did a big mass mailing of customer guides to our active customers. But typically, when customers come in to either get certified or recertified, that Metro Access guide is provided to those customers. A lot of times when we do outreach or out in the community, we'll have customer guides with us for customers to have if they so need it or choose to have it.
Thank you. All right. Philippa? Philippa.
Philippa. Philippa. Right, first time. Does the guide include anything about Transport DC or just the van service?
There is just general information about Transport DC as well as Abilities Ride, and that would be included in this particular revision. We've included just general information about those two alternative transportation services. Yes, as well as a list of other alternative transportation services that Metro Access customers can take advantage of.
All right. Any other feedback before we move on? Because I would like to get another agenda item that was spoke about in the email, too. But before that, Abilities Ride, Mr. Blake. So any word yet about the Misty Rider program or the scope of work or, you know, what's going on with that and a potential vendor meeting? So what does the timeline look like or, you know?
Yeah, so let's start with the solicitation for new partners and an expanded service area. I thought it would have been done by the time the meeting came, and technically they did, my colleagues in procurement did. They sent it to me at 3:30 today. So there's a couple of things I'm going to change. The main thing I think you want to know about, because again, we walked through the solicitation and you saw that there wasn't a whole lot of changes from the current abilities ride, other than we're going to allow potential providers to select what areas of the service area they wish to serve. That means they're not going to be required to serve the entire service area or an entire county or an entire part of a state. They can choose the section of in part of the Metro Access service area they wish to serve. And just so you know, this is something we did back in Baltimore as well. Nothing's new in my world generally. You'll see on the Baltimore website there are 18 different companies in their version of Abilities Ride, and each one, you know, selects where they want to serve. And it's been pretty successful, I would say. But the one thing we are going to change, I have to let my colleagues know, I'm looking at December the 11th. That's a Tuesday. Tuesday, December 11th for the pre-proposal conference. And I will try to, well, not try, I will have it at 4 p.m., 4 to 6 p.m. All right, so that's a way to try to address the wishes of you, Mr. Chair, and the committee to be able to participate and hear what some of us, well, one, be able to identify some of the companies that are showing interest, hear some of their thoughts, questions, concerns, ideas, but also for members, as some did during the last pre-proposal conference, make your own public statement, if you will, and let the companies that are showing interest in the program hear from the customers directly.
So that's Tuesday, December 11th from 4 to 6 p.m. here in this wonderful meeting room.
Well, either here or next door. So that's my plans right now, because, again, I just received the document from my colleagues. I will see if there's any concerns or issues, but I don't think it's going to be nothing we can't overcome it to accommodate the members of the committee and still have those companies that are interested in participating or at least hearing about this opportunity to attend. So that's where we are on that. So what that means, if we're having a pre-proposal conference on December the 11th, which is still tentative, that would mean certainly then by the next time the AAC meets, I mean, I'm talking about the full committee, this may already be out on the street in public. But again, you all have seen it already. We've talked about it. There hasn't been a whole lot of changes. So that's kind of where we're moving forward with that. All right. And as far as the mystery rider, we're still working on it. We've had to go through the whole application. This is a short week, but I will personally send you the application tomorrow. Of where we are right now. Okay, she says, I see you, Ms. Rush. I see you. So I will personally send you an application about the Mystery Rider program. And we're going to try to expedite that.
The date you said you had in it until this end of the year, and half the year is almost...
It's almost over.
Yeah, half the time is almost over.
But the program will still be here, and we still... Things happen, and It just happens that way sometimes. And then the latest delay was the application. This is a company we're partnering with. For every client they've ever had, they've used a certain type of application. They want a certain type of information. Some members who we reached out to, one on this committee, one who's not on the committee, expressed very strong objections to the information you would have had to share in order to participate with this company. So that too created a situation where we had to talk to the company, modify their application, get them comfortable, because they're a legitimate business and they like covering their bases as well. So yeah, it's taken a little longer than we anticipated, but the program is here, and there will be mystery rides, and there will be feedback and compensation and all the things that we've promised with the program.
Now, when I did glance at the application, from my understanding, and maybe a little bit different than what you maybe realize, was it's only $5 for each doing each of the surveys, and only a $5 compensation for a $5 trip. So if you took a trip, it generally would have to be one that's $5. No more than that, you'd be compensated for, because it did state that on the application. Will that be the same?
Correct. Yeah. But here's one way.
Because you were saying in the beginning, oh, pay for the trip is regular and then get reimbursed, but now it said different when I looked at the application than what you stated previously.
Well, I think when you say it that way, then maybe I needed to be a little clearer, because yes. I think when I looked at the application, I said this is
a little bit different than what you said.
But yes, Metro is not going to pay for a $100 trip if you choose to take a cab to New York City. I mean, well, it'd be more than 100.
I'm talking about within.
But my point is, yes, we were talking about the customer fare. Then Metro pays the next 15. So technically, though, let's say you decide to take a trip from your home to, Silver Spring. Mm-hmm. And that would cost you as a customer $10. Mm-hmm. You know, the $5, then Metro's 15, and then another 5. Well, you still could use the program and basically be giving yourself a $5 discount. No, we're not going to pay the $10 that's coming out of your pocket, but we are giving you $5 fare. So if I wasn't clear, if I gave you the impression that we'll pay an unlimited amount for the customer fare, then that was certainly not the impression I intended to give.
Yeah, that was the impression I got. Like, I'm paying the regular fare for whatever the trip is, and then I get reimbursed. And when I saw, it's only for a $5 flat fare trip that's within it that you take,
This is a trip you would not use your promotion on, although you could do that. Oh, you just, you know, there won't be a per se a compensation because you won't be charged a fare. But you're going to be paid for each survey. And again, if you take a mystery ride where you are paying that first $5, you're going to get that $5 back.
Okay, got it. Just wanted to be clear, that's all.
Okay. So you'll get more information about that. We're moving forward with that. We're not going to shorten it. I mean, it hasn't started at the time we want it, but it's going to run its course. We're going to do 2,000 trips on it, and how many ever you wish to take, and Ms. Rush and Mr. Torres and everyone else who wants to participate, we're going to make sure it happens. But we want to get it right and not have issues and challenges. So we're just trying to get it right. So, anything else on Billy's ride?
Let's see. We're looking to have more providers than the two that we have. I'm going to say it. Only one choice right now. But hey,
that's the goal of the solicitation. And I will just tell you, yeah, there's likelihood there'll be more participants, but I can't sit here and guarantee you. Let's say, for example, there'll be a new one who wishes to serve Prince George's County. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, that would be disappointing, but I can't guarantee there'll be a provider who wants to serve Virginia. We just have to put it out and see what the response is.
Now, I do want to go into, because you did send us numbers the last time about the effects of Abilities Ride, and I noticed in those numbers, if I'm correctly stating, the improvement with Montgomery County, while there was... it was much more significant with Montgomery County versus Prince George's. While there was a decrease, it wasn't as significant as Montgomery County, if I'm stating it correctly.
That's about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There was more Montgomery.
Montgomery came down
significantly more than Prince George's.
Prince George's just didn't go up as fast.
Yeah.
As it had been.
Any thoughts about that, or?
That's to be expected. It's somewhat disappointing. We wanted to see everybody go down, and some of that's on me. I have to just market it better. I have to do maybe more persuasive robocalls, or just I know it's rush. I have to do something to get more people to try using the service, and that's just really the nature of the business. And I guess one thing you can say is if some people have not been completely satisfied with the vendor in Prince George's, let's put it that way, or the one that primarily serves Prince George's. As I told him in the, I think my infamous statement, according to some, I told the potential vendors at that meeting, there are like 900,000 trips in Prince George's in Montgomery County. You guys can have all of them. And that didn't go over too well with some of my higher-ups, the way I was kind of just open about it. But what I told them is that if you provide great service, customers will choose you as opposed to the more restrictive paratransit service.
And that's what I said for the few times I did Regency. At least I can say the service was wonderful from the driver compared to
and
getting Prince George's.
And so others, customers, probably have felt somewhat the way you felt, and they say, you know, you can give it to me for free. I'm not riding this. I'm going to stick with Metro Access because at least I know the quality I'm getting there.
Because like I said, one thing I would say with Regency, at least I know with the trips I made, they did call you when you're there, when they're late. With Silver Cab, the onus is on the customer, and you don't know when they're going to come. At least there's some indication. At least they have an app going, and those who have access to it can see that. But I just felt it was a little bit more professional, at least in that realm. You know, if I lived there, then maybe I'd do more trips with that. But that being said, that's just my own personal opinion.
And all I would say to you is if you come to the pre-proposal conference, I'm not going to tell you what to say. I wouldn't necessarily talk about individual companies, but I would what you just expressed, the things you believe in, the things that you want and that you've experienced that you like versus the things you don't like, you ought to share that.
Okay. Ms. Rush?
I'm trying to understand where you say they can choose the area that they want to participate. So if a particular provider says he wants, I just want to do DC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that mean that it has to start and end in DC only, or it has to start in DC and you can go to Maryland? But what does that mean when they say the area?
What it would mean is that they would specify that. So let's go. We'll use an example here, but let's use the Baltimore example that I'm familiar with. So you have a cab company, let's say, doesn't have to be a cab company, but you have a cab company in Anne Arundel County. The Baltimore metro area is very large. It's about 1,200, 1,300 square miles, not as large as metro. It's pretty large. So a cab company that's operating out of Annapolis, Maryland, generally speaking, does not want to travel to Baltimore County, Maryland. That's a very long ride for relatively a little bit of money, and then you have a long trip back with no money at all. So what that company would say is we're willing to provide trips that begin or end in Anne Arundel County. And that information is listed on the website. So that when customers are interested in using Taxi Access 2 and they're looking around for which company they're going to pick, well, my trip is in Annapolis and I want to go to BWI, which also is in Anne Arundel County. Well, I may choose company A.
Well, it seems to me that's the same thing we're doing now. I mean, PG wants to really stay in PG, but now we say PG, we will come to D.C., but they really don't want to come to D.C. to go back to PG. So we're going in a circle, aren't we?
Well, very similar, except yeah. Here's the difference. Right now, yes, trips can begin or end in Maryland. That's Metro setting the rules. What the example I'm using for the Baltimore MTA, the companies themselves decide their service area. So when we told whoever wanted to participate in Abilities Ride this first round, which we're currently under, we told them all trips must begin and end in Maryland, and you have to either directly or through partners serve the entire area of the Metro Access service area in Maryland. Well, that to some, that may have, you know, moved a few people away from participating, because if they're up in Montgomery County, they don't have the resources or the partnerships to provide service in Prince George's, so maybe they didn't participate. So you're right. In a lot of ways, it sounds the same, but we're not setting that as a requirement. So if a company does just want to serve Montgomery County or does just want to serve Prince George's and not leave the Prince George's boundary, that'll be their choice given all other demands that we're putting on them. And perhaps that can get you more competition even just in Prince George's County. Time will tell.
All right. Any other comments? And
we got a public comment from our award winner. Here's the mic over here, Bill. Bill.
And me.
Bill.
And me.
Oh, Philip. No. Committee members first. I've got it. You want? I thought he wanted to speak. No, the same thing. I mean, go ahead and talk.
Go ahead on the mic.
I had asked that someone be here to explain DC Transport, and I realized I was out of town, so I couldn't remind anyone. But I still don't understand what's going on with DC Transport. Something about a pool ride.
Okay, so Transport DC, I mean, it's similar. I mean, but we could talk about it real quick. Transport DC, the DC government officials are trying to find ways to maximize the resources they have for those trips. Metro has offered a proposal that we think will get more people to use it and enjoy it more. The leaders of DC have decided to go in, not necessarily our fair discount promotion way. They prefer this pool idea, which is you'll get a discount if you decide to ride with another customer. It may even be free. I'm not sure. But my challenge, and I've told them this, but it's their program, but my challenge with the whole Transport DC as it is currently is still the beginning of the month, you can go wherever you want to go. The second half of the month, it's restricted. I've never believed in that. I've told them that. I've been on record saying that. More recently, they did respond and have shown a favorability to the fair discount program. So now our lawyers and their lawyers are going through some paperwork. So pretty soon, maybe you'll get a robocall from me about potentially a free trip. And maybe your reaction will probably be the same as Ms. Rush's and just laugh. But now that, I'm not sure. I have to find out more. To wherever you wanted to go, was at work? Well, they may be doing that. Let me find out for sure. But yeah, they have a lot of different rules, but they'll be on the website as well. I mean, that's... Yes. We agree.
All right. Darnice?
I just want to say the pool ride is not up to the customer. The pool ride is up to their staff. And the pool ride could take place at any time, and you wouldn't know it until the cab actually pulled up. Or, you know,
what kind of incentive is that?
I don't know.
No, but
hold on one person at a time.
I call 30 minutes in advance.
It doesn't make any difference.
But to accept a pool ride, that I could do a pool ride. And if no one showed up, I still get the ride for free, is what I was told. But that was yellow cab, not anything official.
Yeah, see, it's confusing. Nobody knows.
All right.
I'll get more information, yeah.
Okay. All right, Elver.
Based on my experience with Transport DC and the pool ride is that you call, request a service for 30 minutes in advance or an hour. I need to arrive at 6 p.m., and it is 5 p.m., so they ask me right up front, okay, do you want to the pool service that we are offering right now, or do you want a cab just for yourself? So that is what my experience has been, and I have chosen just to see how that works, to share the taxi with someone else, and the driver comes. He picks me up, and 10-15 minutes later, when we are riding, the driver says, nobody is coming to join you, so you don't have to pay anything, and I will take you right away to where you go.
Right, okay.
That is what I got so far.
That's what I was told.
Okay.
All right.
That's just like Uber and Lyft.
All right, so now we finished with that topic. Phil, I'm going to give you
before,
about...
Before. Okay. We'll wait for public comment.
Phil, you... we can wait to public comment. So, Phil, you want to... I'm giving you about 20 minutes to have that little discussion, since we have some time, about what we had an email about Metro Access and emergencies.
Okay, so you want to facilitate this? Let me do a lot of things about Metro Access, which came up at the same time with the budget.
Phil, wanted to do this thing and have it on the agenda, so I'm going to stick to one topic at a time.
The question that we had...
excuse me, Mr. Phil, would you mind to switch microphones, because that one is not working at all?
I think it's me.
No, I think it's the microphone.
No, I think it's me.
Really?
I can speak up if you want me to.
Oh.
But I'm saving my voice for later.
Understanding.
But what we were talking about, emergencies, Ms. Russ presented to the board, and it was in the letter to the board. And that is, one, there's still no first aid kits on the vans. And two, in order for the driver to contact 911, they have to contact the Operation Control Center before they can make the call to 911. And thirdly, the experience that we had reported was the time between attempting to contact the Operation Control Center and actually contacting the Operation Control Center is longer than should be for an emergency. And so the suggestion was that either the driver gives them one shot and then makes the call to 911, or they set up an emergency line so that the driver pushes the red button and they know there's one person in Operation Control Center that has nothing else to do but to reply to the emergencies. So the problem is the time it takes to get a call to 911. And the suggested remedy is let the driver use their own discretion or ensure that there is an immediate response for the call to go out.
All right. So I'm looking at which staff wants to respond to that.
I would like the director to respond, Terry Ann Williams, and perhaps MV. We want to hear about the idea of the staff, who's there to answer emergency calls. And I think this is, since we do have some time, I'm not trying to just use up your time, but I think this is a fair and open discussion. Let's see what the director says first.
Okay.
But also, maybe, what would the service delivery providers say about their drivers making the emergency calls? So I think we can have a quick, robust discussion before we have to go back to the board, or before you go back to the board with your recommendation. So let's start with the director.
Thank you. I'd like to offer that we believe that the drivers absolutely have the discretion to decide when they need to call 911 immediately versus notifying the OCC before they make a call to 911. If a customer's life or their lives are in imminent danger, I certainly hope the vehicle operators would call 911 immediately and then notify the OCC. If there's some confusion with regard to that, I'm certainly sure that I could partner with the service delivery providers to clarify that particular piece. I would defer to MV as to whether or not they have the staff that could be dedicated to just answering those emergency situations, but I also know that there have been some recent challenges with the vehicle operators reaching OCC on the first attempt. So we recognize that, and we're working on improving that. They just finished or graduated a class of dispatchers the week before last. 9 new people were added to that team. So we hope to see that time reduced significantly, but drivers absolutely can bypass the OCC if there is imminent danger.
All right.
I think that settles it, but let's hear about the staffing in those occasions, both emergency and non-emergency, when drivers are trying to reach the call center.
Well, we have set up, if we're looking at dedicated staff, we can certainly explore those options and work with Max and the service delivery to get that set up. It's something we would need to explore and exactly how that would work, especially if there's an alert button we can access on the push-to-talk radios. We can look into that also. We have had it set up that if they are not able to get the OCC, they would call their own base and then would get a hold of a manager at our place, and that has been working. But, I know there's still some delays, but and we're working to rectify that situation.
All right.
And service delivery, you want to comment on your drivers having?
So after that, Elva wanted to comment along with Denise.
Testing. Yeah. Robbie Worth with Diamond National Express. I've been around a few years on this project, and we have had, a case history of events that have happened. And any way that we can reduce the delay would be advantageous. And we look to Ms. Williams Hall to lead us in the right direction. She's pushing all the right buttons. But we really need to have the operator be able to make an independent decision if, rather than making a rule saying we have to go back to the vehicle, get the radio. Don't forget, door-to-door is a two-hand procedure, so some operators leave the radio in. Some will put it in their pocket. So we really need to, whatever we need to do, we need to reduce the amount of time and always make the call rather than delay and think about it or wait for an opinion from the call center that may be right or may be wrong. We've had two kind of really bad experiences over the years on that. So that's all I have to say about that.
How you doing? Russell Carter from First Transit. I agree with Robert here also. I think the driver should be able to make that call went out in the service area because there are eyes and ears out there. And we depend on them for a lot of things, and so we should depend on them also to be able to tell the severity of whatever issue was going on at the time. So whatever we can do to help that process would be greatly appreciated.
All right. Thank you.
Sorry. So now we have AEC members that would like to respond, starting with Elver, then followed by Denise. Go, Elver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hear that the driver would have the choice of calling 911, but at the same time, I hear that because of the protocol, there must be some kind of notification to the Metro Access Center. So a suggestion is if there is going to be a staff dedicated to attend emergencies, shall like a one phone call at the same time, like the center is listening what the driver is calling the 911, so they can have that on the record, though 911 has all the records. But the second question is, do the drivers know when there is a really emergency that it is visible of, yes, we do know, when you see blood or something like that, or any kind of car accident, something related. But what about those emergencies that are not visible? Let's say I am a driver of Metro Access and I am with a young man who has an intellectual disability, is not verbal, and he's about to get a stroke. So do we know something about those procedures? So do the drivers know what to do in emergencies such as it is not visible, but it is an emergency? So kind of prevention thing. So how are the drivers trained to get or to guess or to assume that there is an emergency like that?
Yeah, to expand on Elver's comment, if it's someone like that who has a service animal who responds to an aura or a pre-stroke, do the drivers know that that service animal is telling them, call 911? And that's a tough take, I mean, to expect drivers to be able to do that.
So I'll start by responding to your first statement. It sounds like, based on the remarks from our service delivery providers, that there is some confusion with the drivers with regard to whether they have the latitude to decide when to call 911 and when not to. So that's an opportunity for my staff and the service delivery providers to clarify that and make sure they understand what to do. It is not my proposal, though I certainly can be overruled by the acting AGM, that I would have a life in imminent danger and they would have to call the OCC first. So I will tell you that we'll work through that, and by the time we come back to the next meeting, we'll have clearly defined protocol that we can present to you guys for how we will move forward with that going forward. With regard to your second question, and can you just remind me quickly? training. That's
training.
Right.
Thank you.
So we are not trained to provide any kind of medical assistance whatsoever. The extent of our training is door-to-door service, and that's it. So at this time, we are incapable of providing that. We would not be able to read any indications from service animals or know what to do in that case. That's the way that it is today. Now transition over to the Acting AGM about whether that's going to change.
Well, let me ask a question. You have pretty good descriptions of the individual driver's disabilities. And on their profile that goes out to the driver, you might be able to say potential seizure, potential this, potential that, with the service animal that's there. And so the question is, while they're not skilled in doing anything, if they get a heads up to look for that, that suddenly the service animal is giving them a clue, then they can push the button. And
So let's back up for 1 second, because when this first came up in front of the board, the question was asked. So what was shared back, not necessarily to board members, to people who were asking me, is that right now, the policy, the practice is, there's an emergency, the driver calls the OCC, calls MV, can't reach MV, they call their base, who then calls 911 or follows up. In discussions, that does sound problematic. It certainly sounds problematic to me and to most people. And I think what you've heard, and I certainly support it 100%, I just don't want to, you know, get in the weeds of everything and try to run things. But I think what you've heard tonight, AAC, is the leadership of Metro Access, backed by myself, saying, and with the support of the service delivery providers, saying, we think that's going, we need to change that. And if there is a clear emergency, drivers should be allowed to call 911 without fear of any retribution out of the concern and safety of the customers. So that's a done deal. We're going to get that on the record, and that's going to move forward. Now, as far as training our drivers, in terms of medical emergencies, especially those that are not necessarily visible, even with service animal, I would have to back up on that one for a minute. And we're going to have to look at it because, to be honest, let's use your example of the service animal and a note in the manifest. I mean, just be frank and honest, and we have to think about it a little longer. I really don't know if I want our Metro Access drivers focused on whether the service animal is moving behind them, and is that a potential stroke. I think we want our drivers trained to drive safely, be public transit drivers, and provide door-to-door service, which is a little different than general public transportation. I don't think we want to make them sort of EMS light. I think they have a lot on their plate as it is, and if we give them the flexibility to recognize an emergency and act if they need to on their own volition, I think that's about as far as we can go right now. Taking it to another level of emergencies and spotting different disabilities and potential issues, I think we're putting a grave burden on our drivers, and I don't know if that's going to create more issues than it resolves.
The reality of service animals is they make a lot of noise when there's a problem, and so it's not a question of distracting the driver, having them look back. And so the point is, if they know there's a service animal that alerts to emergencies, then they should know if there's a lot of noise coming on back there, slow down and see what's up. But you're right. But that could be part of the training.
Well, let's look at that aspect a little further. But I think in the short term, I think we've made some progress that I think is just illogical. Because when you just share out there, a person's on a van having a heart attack, but I can't call 911 because I got to get it. Nobody's buying that.
Yeah,
and so we're going to move on that.
The other question for dispatch, again, because it's important for dispatch to know that there's an emergency going on.
Uh-huh.
And since you guys do have a button to push when they get on, if there's a way to code that button so that once they're going, that same button that says someone's on there says that there is an emergency on the van, and then you guys know that you have to start worrying about rerouting.
We're already actually looking at the messaging capability on the Rangers. If there isn't a message that's there, and I believe that there is, I'm looking back to Mr. Scruggs to confirm.
There is a methodology within the technology to do that. We just have to work with them to see how well it's integrated.
And so what he's saying is that the ranger allows for them to, with the push of one button, communicate that there's an emergency on board back to the OCC. So we're looking at getting that upgraded and providing that access to the drivers. You're quite welcome.
Because, like, I know in New York City, for instance, like with accidents, they have a very specific, protocol for it, but the drivers are able, through technology on their particular ranger for AccessoRide, access it, and from what I've seen is everything, they get everything to the scene within less than 30 minutes. And for a big city like that, for them to do that, that's pretty awesome, because I got to see it at one, when the vehicle was hit. I was like, oh, if they can able to message, know that this has to be dealt with, there's an accident going on, and do what they need to do safety-wise, bam, 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 without it turning into a two-hour fiasco of we're still trying to get here deal, that'd be great.
This is my personal opinion. Expecting the driver to drive in traffic, ride down the highway, wherever, and we all have emergencies, but they're not medically trained. They are trying to watch the road, make sure there isn't an accident. If something's going on the bus and there's an emergency, I think they should be trained to call 911 if there's an emergency. But to expect them to, how are they going to know if I'm having a stroke in the back of the bus? He's not looking in the back of the bus, and it's not his fault, but he should be able to directly call for 911 and then call OCC. But to call OCC and then, if they can't get OCC, call their base, is that's two calls when I need 911 right now. So I did hear them say that they're going to start in training or retrain or reiterate that we had one policy and this policy is going to be the new policy, and this is what we're going to do. But for me as a customer to think that he's going to be watching what's going on in the back of the bus, and even if I can't talk or whatever, if I'm having a heart attack or if I just slump on over, then yes, call 911, but have to make two other calls before you call 911. Well, I'm gone.
So we're going to have a couple of mystery riders have heart attacks and strokes on the vans, aren't we?
Well, I agree. I think that should be a good experience to try with the drivers, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's too much. I think, we want the driver to do a little bit too much.
I see your hand, Darnese.
We don't have any medical doctors or any kind of training, even for first aid. Well, we definitely need some first aid kits on the vehicle, but that is limited. I may have cut my hand or something and need a Band-Aid or something. We have nothing to wrap, any gauze or nothing like that. But any kind of other services, and that's from mouth to mouth or whatever, we need 911. That's just my opinion.
As a suggestion for the first aid kits, because we do this at the Library of Congress, we have them at every station. No employees use them. The customer comes up bleeding or cut or whatever and says, do you have a Band-Aid or a gauze pad or whatever, and you're happy to provide it for them. And so, the liability is not there because our employees are not capable of doing that. So, again, if we could have a kit on board with some Band-Aids and things like that, no drugs, no aspirin, no whatever, but just some Band-Aids, bandages, gauze pads, whatever, and let the customer, ask for it, and it's there for them.
All right, Darnese?
Well, basically, that was part of my question, because I know they do have first aid kits on board. And that was my question, when are they authorized to use it? But you actually answered it.
Sir?
The customer has asked that. Is that it?
So I'll defer to service delivery providers. Anybody who has information about the use of the first aid kit.
We
have them on the on our non-Metro Access contracts for STAR and for DOT, City of Alexandria and County of Arlington, for example. And really, I cannot, the main thing that we use out of there are the gloves. The gloves and for biohazards, for the bloodborne pathogens. And if somebody requests a Band-Aid, for example, we will give them a Band-Aid. That's it. We can't apply it. We can't touch the person. We really cannot make physical contact with the person unless it's like an emergency situation. They fall into the floor or something of that nature. But as far as the first aid kit is, it's really just supplies that are carried on the vehicle. And there is only a small, I will say for Virginia Medicaid, there is more of a first aid emphasis on that, but it's very minimal, and it's not annual, so it's not like your Red Cross certified CPR and first aid. It's very minimal training on what you do in an emergency, but as far as using the medical equipment, and then we have to restock them, so there's an expense to it as well. And then sometimes you'll find one that's not been restocked. So as far as on the Metro Access vehicles, we do have a short part of the training that goes over first aid. It's very basic. It's very short. It's no more than an hour. That's it.
So, Robbie, just to be clear, are you saying that the Metro Access vehicles do or do not contain first aid kits?
No, they do not. No. That was a decision I was made, and Mr. Scruggs, I think, could allude to it, about if you had it, then you had to use it, and then we had to do the training. And I think it varies from city to city, so you can go from place to place and see differently, but on ours, we do not have it.
And after Dr. Posner brought that to the attention of the board, that was a question asked as well. Now, unlike the issue about the driver calling 911 in the midst of a grave emergency, which just makes all the sense in the world, the medical kit issue is a more challenging one again. Again, these are not EMS personnel. They're not EMS light. And with a kit, there may be a desire to help, perhaps. And there are liability issues. There are challenges. And I don't know if, we want these outstanding men and women who are outstanding in their role of public transportation drivers and providers now acting as your emergency responder, even for something that may seem minor. I just don't know if that's the role we want them to play.
No, the question is just allow people to have them. If they get involved and do things, there are Good Samaritan laws, so liability is not an issue.
For us to say in this room, Dr. Phil, but I can tell you liability can quickly become an issue if somebody does the wrong thing.
Right, but we're just saying if there's a Band-Aid or a bandage or whatever and the injured person requests it, give it to them or point to the kit and let them open it themselves. I mean, there are ways to get around having any involvement of the driver, but having it available for somebody that needs it. And particularly with a lot of the young kids that are being moved around that are a little bit rambunctious, to say the least, they may get some scrapes and bruises and whatever and need a Band-Aid.
All right, Charlie.
Thank you. My question relates to, if you call 911, normally what happens is they'll show up, and then if the person has to go to the hospital, take them to the hospital. So if a person reports that they need some medical assistance or whatever the problem is, and I recognize that the nature of a Metro Access passenger oftentimes is that they have a diminished capacity to conduct themselves in normal transit situation. So that means that if a person reports they're having an emergency situation or shows signs of having an emergency, then assuming the driver can call 911, and they do, then what is the policy with regards to, does the driver then head for the nearest hospital, or they stay where they at, and 911 shows up there? I don't know. Huh? Okay. That's true. All right.
But may I add something, that if the driver is going to stay in place, then either the driver, the center, but someone should to communicate the entire information to the family members of this rider, because I have seen cases that family doesn't get none of the information, just the family is missing my boy. Where is my boy? Family is not aware of the situation, and here is the police, 911, etc., and later on is one, you know, so that is something to say about it, please.
That really is part of the role, a major part of, once the driver has contacted 911, that they do contact the OCC to, one, allow the OCC to get more help to the scene to actually also locate where they are, because the driver may not even know where they are exactly. So that the OCC can look at AVL, tell exactly where they are, communicate with the authorities on that, provide other information to Metro Safe Department, to the Road Soup, make the contact with the emergency contact that's on file for that customer to notify them of the situation. So definitely the OCC does play a role in trying to expedite further assistance, as well as make the contact with the emergency person that customer has designated to be contacted in the case of an emergency.
Patrick, introduce yourself. Oh, they put the wrong name up there. Oops.
Steve has hair.
What's that? Oh, yeah. I'm Steve now? Okay.
No.
Oh. Oh, no, I'm Patrick. Okay. Patchy in Silver Spring, Maryland. Thanks. Yeah, Steve is better looking. He does have hair.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to go to customer comment, but we can definitely come back to this. I just want to make sure these people get their needs addressed. So, well, 3 minutes to the mic for Bill Orleans.
A question or two. Did I understand correctly that in this new solicitation that it's going to be open from providers from other than Prince George's Center or Montgomery County?
That is correct.
And the question of someone traveling from either of those two counties to the district or Virginia is potentially available to those customers?
Yes, if we have vendors willing to provide the service, then yes, they will be able to travel throughout the service area.
And the payment is the same, but the distance of travel is different between the two counties in Maryland. Is the payment going to be the same for Virginia providers and or district if you're opening up the district providers as well?
Yes, payment will be the same, which is why a long trip, let's say from Largo to Springfield, Virginia, won't happen on.
But say from National Harbor to downtown Alexandria is a logical.
No, that's probably out of the question too. Because what's going to happen is the customer will still pay the first $5. Metro will still pay the next $15. You look at cab or other transportation industry rates, you're only going to go but so far for $20.
But the rate of fare beyond the $20 that the rider or customer will be paying is the rate of fare charged by the company or the provider in that local, if it's a taxi company.
Correct. And which is why for a trip from, again, the example you use, National Harbor to Alexandria, Metro Access would still be, if the customer can't use fixed route service, Metro Access would still be that customer's best option.
I look forward to a discussion of that at the pre-proposal conference December 11th. At what time?
Well, that's a tentative date.
Tentative, but it's
tentative.
But I'm going to do my best to make that the date.
And what's the tentative time? I missed that earlier.
4:00.
4:00. On two other subjects very quickly, I know of one person who's had many good experiences with Abilities Ride and some very bad experiences. And since I'm never around when the report on Abilities Ride is provided publicly. I know committee members get it via email. I don't know if, in fact, there is time given over to the complaints about Abilities Ride. It's been more than a year now that it's been functioning in Montgomery and Prince George's. I'd be interested in seeing some analysis of the nature of complaints or just the raw numbers, how many there have been, how they've been addressed. Lastly, quickly on another subject entirely, I've been given to understand that there may be members of the full committee that have had the opportunity to participate in Metro's bus transformation study project. At the next full committee, can there be some information provided about the AAC's ability to participate in that project study?
I don't see any reason why not. Sure. There are about four members, I understand, who are participating. So
yeah,
if we could put it on.
There's me, Steve, Kathin, Doris, and what did I just draw?
Miss Brooks was supposed to be.
Hazel, who has never shown up to the meeting.
She hasn't been to the meeting, right?
No. But Doris has been to one meeting, and Steve and I have been to two of the meetings.
Okay, so we'll put it on the agenda if you all want to
give an update
next meeting.
Okay. All right, so next for public comment period will be Phil. 3 minutes. Go with
your
other comments.
The direct Metro Access comments have to do with the budget hearings. And people have been asking about talking points, which will continue to evolve. But the two items that are definitely going to be part of the talking points if they proceed the way they're going are the proposed $2 flat weekend fare for bus and rail, in which case we have to continue to remind WMATA that $2 flat weekend fare for bus and rail means a $2 flat weekend fare for all Metro Access rides. And we will have to see how that continues. There's still some discussion.
$4,
right?
It'll be $4. It'll be twice.
So,
the other thing is there are a whole slew of passes being introduced, and there is no pass for Metro Access, and so I think we need to push for a Metro Access pass. There is a new philosophy now that we are not a business, we are a service organization, and so we want to increase ridership, not make money. And that's a debate that's going on very vigorously between the board and the general manager. So I'm just updating everybody about it. Mr. Blake is laughing, as we all should. The other thing, which is not Metro Access related, the Yellow Line is going to be shut down between November 26th and December the 9th. And during that period, they're replacing the Yellow Line with the Blue Line. And the Blue Line will split so that half the Blue Line will go to Franconia Springfield, half of the Blue Line will go to Huntington. And we want to make certain for the disability community that, like they have done in the past, there are employees on the platform to announce which train is which. For those people that can actually see or hear, make sure that the signs are correct on those trains, not that they say special train, and that the announcements are made when the train is in the station waiting for people to board, not when it's so noisy that they can't hear it, and make sure they can be heard. Because that's going to be a disaster if all those things don't happen. And I apologize for doing that in bus rail, but it came out after bus rail rather than Metro Access. Thank you.
Now, before Ms. Rush does speak, Mr. Blake, so I'm going to the first one about the flat fare thing. If that does go through, I know this is off the cuff and y'all will have to figure this out, but what about Metro Access?
Think as we've spoken before, I thought we talked about this. We strictly adhere to the ADA, and that means you pay twice the fastest fixed route fare. So if it's a flat fare of $2, then the Metro Access fare would be a flat fare of $4.
And my question would be then, if that didn't possibly become policy for weekends, whenever that happens, will y'all be prepared to do it on the same date that they do it for bus and rail?
We would have to be per the law.
Okay. Sorry. All right. The passes, I'm going to let you speak to that or maybe give a few thoughts. I know you have opinions about it.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm not against the concept of passes. I mean, we already have what we call late trip credits, so there are things we're doing. But keep in mind now, Metro Access and my job as a public transit agency is to ensure that Metro Access is available for all customers whose disabilities prevent them from using bus or rail for at least some of your trips. But per the ADA, also the same law that we're using to ensure that availability of quality, efficient, and safe service also says it should be a safety net. So I don't know if I'm inclined at the moment. I mean, I'm not against the notion of it, but we have to look at it and look at the impact. But my focus for all of you, this is not patronizing, it's my job. My focus for all of you is to ensure that you need Metro Access as little as possible. So that's why we want the most accessible fixed route system to remain so. That's why we want our buses to continue to increase in their accessibility, and we want to increase opportunities for you when you need transportation to use alternatives and options that people who don't have disabilities have at their disposal as well. So that's kind of where my focus is, while also ensuring that Metro Access is safe, efficient, and a quality service per the law. So I haven't spent, I know Dr. Phil has been talking about the past for a while, so I haven't been like ignoring it or nothing, but I haven't spent a lot of work-related capital on it yet because we have so many other opportunities for customers who are eligible for Metro Access before we get to a pass. But that's why the AAC exists, because when staff doesn't necessarily jump, you have a direct relationship to the board, you have a board report, and I think you should continue to advocate, as I've said about everything. You've heard me say this over the years. Continue to advocate for what you believe in, and eventually we all get to the same point in time.
Especially when other large agencies like us do have passes for paratransit.
That's what I was going to say. But and I think that's going to be on record. Did you get that anew? I mean, I think that's going to be on the record. Okay.
All right, let's put it on the record.
Yeah, okay. And that's why I say that will be one of our talking points that we bring forward and discuss. And we have a model of that, which is modeled on the Name Your Own Fare pass that's being used on rail right now. And along with the GM's comment that we are now service rather than anything else. And the fact that everyone else gets a pass and we don't smacks of disenfranchisement. I didn't say that to you, Chris.
So, Ms. Rush, you have the last
one. One thing before Ms. Rush, because then I noticed to get her going. How about a pass, but we eliminate the late trip credits?
Well, if we eliminate the late trip credits, then we ought to eliminate the rush hour promise to the rail riders. I'm asking for equality.
Anyhow, Ms. Rush, you have the last word.
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Are the late trip credits for long Metro Access rides? Did I miss something?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The only ones that are past the 30-minute window.
Oh,
even a minute.
I'm sorry.
Well, it should be for deliveries, but anyway.
Yes. Oh, comparable. I should have left it alone.
All right, so Ms. Rush, last word.
So it's comparable.
That, that 3 minutes. That just lets you know that the door opens and shuts. Yeah, okay, so if you're going to talk about the on time, then you should talk about if I have a 5 o'clock appointment and I get delivered home at 5:45, that's 45 minutes late from my appointment. Oops. But my concern, right? Excuse me?
Didn't you give an apology?
Because
that's what you did.
All right, go ahead, Ms.
Well, anyway, but that doesn't pay the doctor fee that I have to pay because I missed the appointment. But my issue right now is attendance and commitment to the committee. We've had meetings. We didn't have a quorum. I don't know how many are here tonight. But when you get on the committee, we have 10. That's not a quorum, but it's pretty close. But I'm saying attendance, and when you apply, or it's a commitment, and I know it's time consuming, but meet your commitment. If we can't get a quorum at the AAC, that is a concern. And sometimes it's two or three people at bus rail, two or three people, four people at the AAC. It's
it's not a good feeling.
Well, we may go to worry of the rack, which is reduced a number to 11 instead of...
So you're saying 20. We need to reduce...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's what the board has done to the rack.
No, we don't want to go there, Phil.
No, we don't. No, but that's what I'm saying is if the we other, can't show up, that's yeah. what they're liable to do.
The other thing to Denise's point also is that it's not only 11 members on the rack, but you have no subcommittee meetings. So it's one meeting a month, that's it. And that's not the way we work, and that would severely, severely cut how effective we could be. So we Denise, to your point, you're right.
So please remember your commitment. I know people get sick, things happen. I know it, but you're committed to two meetings per month. And keep in mind, just because I do not use the fixed route, I'm at every bus rail meeting. You need to be at the meetings, whether you ride Metro Access or not, or whether you ride bus rail, because if you don't know what is being discussed, you don't know the issues, you don't know the concerns. When it comes to the AAC committee to vote, you can't vote. You don't know nothing about it. You haven't talked about it. You don't know about it, and you're not informed. And plus, we want to see you. Now, the other thing is, when is it on the plan for it to talk about grandfathering? Because you keep going further in Virginia, but you cut off in Virginia. I mean, in D.C., Maryland. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, so, Mr. Blake had said he's working on a proposal for that, and he is going to present that possibly at the AAC meeting.
He told
December.
You that?
Well, we're working on it, we're a little ways away from it. But I have an idea that I do need to have vetted with some folks. Although I've never been one to vet a lot. I like to just do things. But this one, I do need to kind of check with some folks. It won't absolutely address the point you're making about grandfather or the concept of expanding grandfathering. That's not on the table, I'll be honest with you.
What's on the table?
What's on the table is the possibility that if you're in the service area for a certain period of time, that's the service area until there's a next review of the service area. It's kind of in that realm. But let me come back to you all with it. I know that was so kind of plain that you give me that face.
Well,
let me
just keep going further into Virginia.
But
and you can't go to Walmart on Saturday in Clinton.
But the thing is about going further in Virginia, it's not like it's, you know, Ms. Williams Hall just making a decision or we just want to get closer to Robbie or anything. I mean, we're following the strict guidelines of the ADA and following.
And ADA is telling you to cut Maryland PG service.
What the ADA is saying is that you're only required to provide paratransit service within 3/4 of a mile of fixed route service. So if there is no fixed route service on the weekend, then there's no requirement to provide paratransit.
Yeah, but it was there, so it was cut. You can go to Walmart in Clinton during